welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. There's true history in this hour, later on Strange as It Seems, from 1935. But first, a broadcast of Eyes Aloft with history in the making during this program from World War II, focusing in on the stories of the people who worked with the Aircraft Warning Service on the West Coast during the Second World War. This NBC episode from November 23, 1942.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Eyes Aloft.
Army flash. One, single, very low, seen, four, grace, nine, overhead, east.
Eyes aloft, watching the sky, watching for planes flying the lanes up above. Eyes aloft.
Eyes aloft. The 4th Fighter Command of the United States Army Air Forces, in cooperation with West Coast radio stations, presents this series of programs honoring the 150,000 volunteer civilian observers and filter center workers whose round-the-clock vigilance keeps watchful guard of the Pacific Coast against attack by enemy planes.
Eyes aloft, night and day, will help protect the USA.
Ken Carpenter speaking. Tonight, the 15th edition of Eyes Aloft, a special program. This evening, we devote our entire broadcast to the telling of a truly great American story, the story of the Santa Maria idea. Many of the Santa Maria, California townspeople have made the trek to Hollywood to be present or participate in this program tonight. And now, may I present your Eyes Aloft narrator, Gayne Whitman.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This summer, two Santa Maria Valley civilian organizations both found themselves facing problems. One was the Santa Maria branch of the Aircraft Warning Service. A warm western summer's night, 21 miles out of Santa Maria, after the main road has been climbing up from the valley, a rutty dirt road branches off through the sagebrush. The dirt road then winds for a mile up sagebrush-covered Cat Canyon in the oil country. Where the road ends at a clump of pepper and eucalyptus trees at the head of Cat Canyon is a tiny corrugated iron shack, an observation post. A full August moon silhouettes the oil derricks, which stand sentinel on the barren hills around. Occasionally, a coyote bays at the moon. Two observers, two men, sit on the step and talk.
Yes, sir. This will be my last night on watch here.
A lot of the folks are dropping out.
Yeah, but I don't think anybody wants to give up.
Of course not.
I'd like to keep on. This is a good thing.
Your tires are shot, huh?
Yeah. Tube's about to come through the fabric on my left rear.
Well, I got about 6,000 left in three of my tires. The other one isn't so hot.
How's your spare?
No spare.
Oh. Well, how are you going to keep coming up here?
I'm not. Much longer. Say, what's going to happen if observers can't keep driving to these posts?
I don't know.
This aircraft warning service is pretty vital to the Army, I guess.
Well, I guess it's pretty vital to the whole country.
Well, the Army better do something about transportation for observers or... Wait a minute. Listen.
Huh. Coyote?
Oh, a plane, I think.
Oh, yeah, plane. Coming from the... Oh, look. You can see it.
Yeah.
Sure shines silver in the moonlight tonight, huh?
Yeah. What if it didn't shine? What if it were black?
Black?
Jap Zeros are painted black.
Yeah.
And what if we or somebody weren't here to report it some night? A Jap invader.
Well, a man can't walk 22 miles to this post.
Yeah. I'll report the plane.
What if that were a Jap Zero? And nobody had tires. Nobody were here to report it. Gosh.
All over the Pacific coast, tires of loyal observers were running smooth. In Santa Maria, Area Supervisor Roy Lindman found observers dropping out in groups against their wishes. They had no transportation. There were 4 observation posts in Roy Lindman's area. He knew they had to be kept in operation. The Army, having already sensed the general problem, was preparing to offer auto contracts. But wait, a moment ago we said that 2 Santa Maria Valley civilian organizations faced a problem. The Santa Maria Valley Red Cross Motor Corps faced a very demoralizing problem. Now, that same summer evening at the home of Mrs. Ed Adams, then the captain of the Motor Corps. The Adamses were sitting out on their front porch for a breath of cool air. Ed was kidding his wife.
Looks to me as if you girls are sort of like the fellow who got all dressed up and had no place to go.
Well, the Motor Corps is an emergency unit, Ed.
You mean you have to sit back and wait for a flood or a tornado or the Japs to drop a bomb on us before you can do anything?
No, the Motor Corps is doing certain things now.
Like what?
Well, we transport food to needy families. And we...
Gee, Edna, you're captain of the outfit, and you don't actually have anything for your girls to do, do you?
No, Ed, and I'm worried about it.
People have to be doing things to keep their interest up.
It was different when we were all busy taking our training.
Oh, sure, the advanced first aid training.
And then later, when they were taking their 20-hour motor mechanics course.
The ladies were coming home looking like grease monkeys. Gosh, Edna, I don't know.
Don't know what?
I've never seen you so interested in anything before.
I love this motor corps work, Ed.
Well, Edna, I'm not trying to give advice, but your motor corps is all trained now. It's raring to go. But it has to have some worthwhile service to perform, or...
Well, several of the ladies and I have talked about the problem, but what can we do? What can the Motor Corps do? What can the Red Cross Motor Corps do here? We're ready, you know. What about it, Ed?
Search me.
If there was just something we could do. Something.
Yes, 2 Santa Maria Valley civilian organizations, each with an immediate problem. They were both destined for possible failure. One August morning, in the office of Roy Lindman, the area supervisor, things were looking darker than usual. Roy's secretary, Mrs. Marion Hardy, was getting out letters to observers.
I'm almost afraid to answer that doggone phone this time.
Want me to stop typing, Roy?
Well, I never can hear over your racket, Marion. What if this is another downhearted chief observer who... Hello.
Roy Lindman?
Yeah?
Alec Strachan.
How are you, Alec?
I'm terrible. 3 of my best observers up at Fox and Canyon Post just had to quit.
Oh, my gosh. Tires?
I know tires. They can't get there. I can't seem to line up enough observers to keep my post covered. Some of them are working 6 and 8 hour shifts now. What'll I do, Roy?
Oh, honest, Alec, I don't know.
Hold
on to those you've got. I've heard something about the Army trying to work out some deal where they're going to let contracts for cars to haul observers.
Well, the Army better do something. The aircraft 1 in service is going to be a dead dog.
Well, I'll check, Alec. I'll get in touch with you as soon as I have some information.
Okay, Roy. But you better get busy if we're going to hold together. I'll talk to you later.
So long, Alec. Oh, gosh.
More trouble?
Alec Strachan, Fox and Canyon Assistant Chief Observer. 3 of his observers had to quit.
I was just thinking, Roy.
And Mrs. Michael says 9 of her Cat Canyon observers have dropped out.
Roy, I have an idea.
What, Marion?
Well, I understand the local Red Cross Motor Corps is in a sort of a spot.
Well, let the Motor Corps take care of its own worries.
I mean, they're on a spot because they're all organized, have their training and their uniforms, and nothing really vital to keep them busy. Now, I just thought that the Red Cross might be willing to transport our observers to the post.
Marion!
If they'd be willing to...
Marion Hardy, you are terrific.
What?
Why, you've just had a brainstorm. The Red Cross Motor Corps haul the Army civilian volunteers to the post. Say, I got to call the Red Cross chairman, Ray Hoy.
Why don't you call Ethel May Dorsey?
Ethel May Dorsey? Why?
Well, because Mrs. Dorsey is director of the Red Cross Volunteer Special Services.
Okay, I'll talk to Mrs. Dorsey.
Shall I get her on the phone?
No, I'll get her. Marion Hardy, you've just had a terrific idea.
Hope it works.
Operator. Operator, connect me with a Harry Dorsey resident.
I'll never get the breakfast dishes done this morning. Hello.
Mrs. Dorsey?
No, this is the housekeeper. Mrs. Dorsey is outside trying to work in the garden if the phone would leave her alone.
I'm sorry to bother, but tell her it's Roy Lindman.
Yes, Mr. Lindman. Just a minute.
Dorsey?
Yes?
Telephone again.
Oh, dear. Well, tell them I'll try
It's Mr. Linman. He says it's important.
All right, all right. Coming.
Hello.
Mrs. Dorsey?
This is the housekeeper I told you once.
But I want to talk to Mrs. Dorsey.
Well, keep your shirt on. She's coming. In fact, she's here.
Here. I'll take it, Mrs. Porterfield.
Saturday morning's madhouse.
Hello, Mr. Linman.
Mrs. Dorsey.
I'm sorry to keep you waiting. I was working in my garden.
Mrs. Dorsey, my secretary just had a great idea.
Yes?
I hear the Red Cross Motor Corps wants a job.
A job? I'll say it does.
Do you think they'd take over the service of carrying observers to the post?
You mean the ground observers who go to those posts?
Yeah, that's it. We're in a jam. Our observers have just about used up their rubber. A lot of them are having to quit. Now, if the Red Cross Motor Corps could help the Army by getting our observers to the post, why,
But we don't own a car. I mean, the chapter doesn't own its own car. We just have our own machine.
Yes, I know, but
we'd all be willing to help, but in no time our tires would be gone, and then you'd be back in the same situation. I wonder if...
Mrs. Dorsey, will you let me talk a minute?
I'm sorry. I'm just so excited about the idea. It's wonderful.
Mrs. Dorsey, I think the Red Cross can get a requisition for a car for this work, and the Army will pay your mileage.
Really? Wonderful.
I'll call Percy Heckendorf in Santa Barbara.
What's the district attorney got to do with this?
Percy is the Aircraft Warning Service County Director. Percy may have some last-minute word from the Army.
Well, be sure and let me know, Mr. Linman.
I'll call you back by and by.
Well, in the meantime, I'll call the Executive Secretary over the chapter.
You mean Fred Howe?
Yes. I'll find out what he thinks about it. Oh, this is wonderful.
I'm glad you're enthused, Mrs. Dorsey. Talk to you later. Bye.
Goodbye. Oh, Mrs. Porterfield, I'm so thrilled.
Yeah, well, so am I. I'm finally getting these breakfast dishes washed.
Now, I've got to telephone Fred Howe and see what he thinks.
Number, please.
210, please, operator.
210.
Busy. Oh, heavens. I know. I'll dress and go right over to the Red Cross office. Saturday morning, everybody should be there. Yes, I'll go right on.
It was a good idea to have the Red Cross Motor Corps drive the observers to the various posts in the area, if it could be worked out. The Red Cross has its very strict national policies under which every chapter must operate. Anyway, dynamic Mrs. Harry Dorsey arrived a few minutes later at the Santa Maria Valley Red Cross chapter.
Oh, well. Good morning, Mrs. Dorsey.
Morning, Mrs. Penfield. My, the office is busy this morning.
Yes, we've really been hurrying.
Is Fred Howe in his office?
I think so.
Is he busy with anyone?
No, why don't you go right on in?
I will. Howe?
Come in, Mrs. Dorsey.
Oh, I've got wonderful news.
Gee, I thought Saturday was your day off from the office here.
Listen, Mr. Howe, Roy Linman just telephoned me. You know how worried we've been about keeping up the morale of the motor corps.
Yeah?
Well, I think they've got a job, a real job.
Oh, doing what?
Hauling observers to the four observation posts.
Oh, so they're having transportation problems, eh? Oh, but wait, Mrs. Dorsey. Where are we going to get the cars for a job like that?
Well, Roy Linman thinks the Army's going to start issuing contracts for cars to haul observers.
Well, the Red Cross would have to be remunerated for a task like that. Well,
I suppose the motor corps would get mileage and a priority for tires, and what do you think, Mr. Howe?
Well, I personally think the Red Cross should take on the service, especially since the request comes from the military. After all, the Red Cross is the connecting link between the military and the civilian. But there's a question in my mind, Mrs. Dorsey.
What's that?
Is our chapter legally able to enter into a contract which is such a business undertaking?
Well, I wouldn't know about that.
I think this is something I ought to talk over with our chairman.
Well, is Mr. Hoy in this morning?
Yes, he was in at 8 this morning. I'll put the proposition up to him. I'll telephone you later.
Fine. Then I'll go right on home and wait to hear. Oh, I do hope we can put this over. It'll mean so much to, well, to all of us.
But in the meantime, that Saturday morning, Roy Linman, the Aircraft Warning Service area supervisor, had called District Attorney County Director Percy Heckendorf in Santa Barbara. Heckendorf considered the matter, told Linman on the phone...
Well, Roy, I can see no legal reason why the Santa Maria chapter shouldn't go ahead and serve the Army.
Wonderful, Percy. I was praying you'd say that.
Matter of fact, I think it's a swell idea.
Yeah, so do I.
I think the Red Cross chapter and the Motor Corps should perform any service that's important to the community and national protection.
I'm going right over to the Red Cross and talk to Ray Hoy and Fred Howe.
Good.
And you have definite word the Army is going ahead with those auto contracts?
Yes, I talked to Captain Smith in Los Angeles last night. It's all set. Lieutenant Pillsbury will be in Santa Maria tomorrow for an 11 o'clock meeting with you fellas at the inn. You better have your Red Cross executive board there on hand.
You bet I will. And thanks for the information, Purse. See you soon. So long. Say, we'll put this thing over yet. You're darn tootin'.
following morning, Sunday, the Army representatives arrived in Santa Maria. At the famous Santa Maria Inn, a meeting was held at 11 o'clock. Roy Lindman had the Red Cross Executive Board present. Lieutenant Evans Pillsbury conducted the meeting.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm happy that your Red Cross chapter will take over the responsibility of transporting our observers. I don't have to impress upon you the importance of staffing the post 24 hours a day.
I think we understand, Lieutenant.
We're certainly glad to have the opportunity to put our motor corps to a real test.
And we're fortunate, Lieutenant, in having Ray Hoy here as chairman of the Santa Maria Valley Red Cross.
Oh?
Yeah, Mr. Hoy has been one of my observers out of the Cat Canyon post.
Yes, and my tires are just about to the point where I have to reserve the last bit of rubber on them for emergencies.
Well, didn't you tell me that that's a 44-mile round trip up to Cat Canyon, Mr. Hoy?
44 miles, Mr. Howe. Right. Say, incidentally, we better figure out how many miles the motor corps will have to drive a month. You know, Lieutenant?
I think Roy Lindman has that figured out quite accurately. Roy, will you report?
Yeah. Let me get my papers out.
I suppose we'll have to buy a second-hand car.
I think a second-hand car will be very adequate, Mrs. Dorsey. Nothing fancy, just good transportation.
All right, here we are.
Now, let's have the figures, Roy.
Well, there are four posts in operation to which observers will have to be transported 24 hours a day and night. I figured all the distances, and conservatively, the motor corps will have to drive, well, hold your breath, folks.
Well, how much, Roy?
10,000 miles a month.
What? 10,000?
You're taking on a real job, people.
Why? Why, that's 120,000 miles a year.
Hey, we'll need a brand new car.
Oh, but how can we get a new car?
The Army will assist you in obtaining any model you want. Except, of course, such models that have been frozen by the government.
Well, then I'll call a full board meeting of all the officers and directors of the chapter for tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. I'm sure everyone will agree the project should be undertaken by the chapter.
Good. Now I'll go over the details of the contract you'll have to present to your board to approve and sign. First, Motor Corps agrees to do all driving. Second, you'll be guaranteed necessary recaps for tires. Third, the Army agrees to pay the Red Cross chapter.
Following Monday morning, the full board of officers and directors of the Santa Maria Valley Red Cross chapter met and approved the Army contract, approved the purchase of a new car, approved all details. Tuesday, Mr. Hoy, Mrs. Dorsey, and Mrs. Ed Adams, who was then the captain of the Motor Corps, had all the Motor Corps members present at a luncheon. They opened the meeting with a Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, I had thought we might have a surprise for you today, but I should have known that you can't keep a secret away from the ladies. Yeah, you all seem to know already that you have a job on your hands, that you're going to work for the military. And you all seem mighty happy about it.
I think it's wonderful.
But I do have two nice little surprises for you. I just received word myself. I haven't even told Mrs. Dorsey here, or your able captain, Edna Adams.
What's that, Mr. Hoy?
Well, the OPA just telegraphed the chapter a priority number so we can buy the new car.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, Fred Howe and myself went ahead and selected an available new car. We hope you'll agree with our choice.
Of what kind?
Captain Adams, can all your members handle a fleet line, two-door Chevrolet sedan?
Oh, indeed they can. I think that's a wonderful choice. What do you ladies think?
Oh, that's grand.
Okay, fine. Now you have the car. We leave the rest up to your captain. How she organizes the routes, the various driving shifts, who among you is to service the car, well, that's up to Captain Adams. And let me say this. I know you ladies of the Santa Maria Valley Red Cross Motor Corps are going to do an efficient job for the Army and the Aircraft Warning Service. I congratulate you all.
Captain of the Motor Corps, Edna Adams, went to work at once.
Schedules were signed. A central place to store the car was arranged for.
Motor Corps members were appointed to service the car.
And on the morning of September 16th, at 5 minutes to 5 a.m., the first load of observers were dropped off at the Cat Canyon Post by the Red Cross Motor Corps.
Canyon Post, all out.
Hey, this is really something. You'll pick us up at 11?
We'll be here on the dot.
Hey, is this the new car they're hauling us around in?
Yeah, morning, Ned. How'd the shift go last night?
Good, reported 3 planes. Say, this car is swell.
Hop in, Ned. I have to get you back to town and turn over the car so the next driver can get an observer out to Fox and Canyon by 6. Hop in.
By golly, this is great, girls.
See you later, Ned.
Okay. Oh, say, I left the heater on for you.
Well, thanks.
Close the door, Ned. We have to keep moving.
Okay, Lieutenant. Well, boy, that's mighty swell transportation for us.
Wonderful.
You know something, Lieutenant?
What's that, Ned?
I was really up against it. If you motor car gals hadn't started doing this, well, I wouldn't have been able to keep on as an observer up here.
Tire trouble?
Tire trouble? Say, my brother had to drive me up here last night in his car. I haven't got any more tires. I just had to put my car up for the duration.
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, I'll get around town okay. Now that you Red Cross Motor Corps gals have taken this up, well, all of us observers will be able to keep our regular watches at the posts. You women are certainly to be congratulated.
You know something, Ned?
What's that, Lieutenant?
Well, we're all kind of proud of ourselves. It's good to have something important to be doing. I guess if we all fight a little, America will win this war yet.
Industry, initiative, imagination, the wholehearted desire to serve their community and their nation. That is the spirit of the Santa Maria Valley Red Cross Motor Corps. 35 men and women keeping them rolling 24 hours a day so that other civilian volunteers may be on guard to scan the skies for the possible approach of enemy planes. Yes, that is the true spirit of Santa Maria.
In a few moments, we want you to meet several of the Santa Maria Red Cross members in person who have come here to this broadcast tonight. But before that, here's Gordon Jenkins and a sportsman in the flash version of the Army novelty song, This is the Army, Mr. Jones.
This is the Army, Mr. Jones. No private rooms or telephones. You had your breakfast in bed before, but you won't have it there anymore. A bunch of frightened rookies were listening filled with awe. They listened while a sergeant was laying down the law. They stood there at attention, their faces turning red. The sergeant looked them over, and this is what he said. Oh, this is the Army, Mr. Jones. No private rooms or telephones. You had your breakfast in bed before, but you won't have it there anymore. This is the Army, Mr. Green. We like the barracks nice and clean. You had a housemaid to clean your floor, but she won't help you out anymore. Do what the buglers command. They're in the Army and not in a band. This is the Army, Mr. Brown. You and your baby went to town. She had you worried, but this is war, and she won't worry you anymore. You're in the Army now, Mr. Jones.
Here now, we want you to meet in person some of the diligent workers, the people who put into force and action the Santa Maria idea. Ken Carpenter, will you take over?
Glad to, Gain. Well, first, I want you to meet Roy Lindman, the Santa Maria area supervisor for the Aircraft Warning Service. Roy, how are things going up in your territory now that the Red Cross solved your transportation headaches?
I don't have any more headaches, Ken. Everything is running smooth as the die. And we have a whole new bunch of observers to help out the old sand standbys now that the Red Cross Motor Corps is on the job. I'm satisfied, and I say thanks.
And thanks to you, Roy Lindman. The Army tells me you've done a consistently excellent job up in your area. Now, Mrs. Harry C. Dorsey, would you step up to our microphone, please?
Yes, Mr. Carpenter.
Now, you're chairman of the Volunteer Special Services of the Santa Maria Red Cross chapter, aren't you, Mrs. Dorsey?
Yes, and I'm especially proud of the work our Motor Corps is doing. I think now that the story has been told over the radio tonight, it may suggest to other communities to do the same.
Well, I think other towns and communities would do well to follow the Santa Maria idea.
Well, if any other Red Cross chapter on the coast is interested and would like to write us and ask questions about problems of organization and such, they are welcome to do so.
That's a generous offer. Whom would they address?
Just address the Red Cross chapter, Santa Maria, California.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Dorsey. And now this lady in the handsome uniform of the Red Cross Motor Corps. You're Mrs. Ed Adams, who originally organized the Santa Maria Motor Corps?
Yes, I organized the group. I saw them through their initial training.
Well, but I understand that you aren't captain of the Motor Corps now, Mrs. Adams.
No, that just about broke my heart when it happened.
Well, I'll bet. What did happen? I mean, you certainly put in a lot of hard work organizing the Corps.
Well, a month or so ago, it was announced that my husband's company was transferring him to another town. I resigned as captain, and Mrs. Longwell was appointed. Ed and I were ready to pack our household belongings and leave Santa Maria.
But your husband's plans were obviously changed?
Yes, and we didn't go. Mrs. Longwell took over the captaincy of the Corps and has handled it like a veteran. She is a fine leader, and they all like and respect her.
Well, you still work with the Motor Corps, Mrs. Adams?
Oh, yes, indeed. I drive my regular shifts and help out every way I can. I wouldn't give up the Motor Corps for anything.
Well, thank you. And you are the new captain, Captain Longwell?
Yes, Mr. Carpenter. And may I say, in return to Mrs. Adams' kind expression, that when I took over the captaincy of the Motor Corps, I found the unit so well organized and directed that I only had to follow along in the line initially set up by Mrs. Adams.
Well, it's good to hear of so healthy an organization. Now, don't go away, Captain Longwell. We want to talk to you again in just a moment. But right now, I want to get acquainted with this gentleman. You're...
Ray Hoy.
Oh, yes. You're executive chairman of the Santa Maria Valley Red Cross chapter, Mr. Hoy.
That's right, Mr. Carpenter.
The head man, so to speak. Well, maybe you could tell us just a few words about the Red Cross in general. Isn't November usually the roll call month, Mr. Hoy?
Yes, it is, but this year there'll be no drive.
Yes, I'd heard that.
You see, due to the generous response of the American public to the last roll call and on the war relief drive after Pearl Harbor, the Red Cross had postponed its regular fall drive for contributions.
Mm-hmm. Postpone it till when?
Till next March. You see, the Red Cross does not collect more funds than are necessary for emergency purposes.
Well, that's certainly a businesslike way for any charity organization to operate. Mr. Hoy, we want to thank you and all the other people of Santa Maria, those who are appearing on the program and those in our auditorium, for coming here to our Eyes Aloft broadcast.
It's our pleasure. Incidentally, most everybody in Santa Maria listens regularly to Eyes Aloft.
Well, that's fine.
It has been an inspiration to all of us to carry on with the Army's Aircraft Warning Service.
Well, we hope we may be doing a little good with these programs. And now I want to turn matters back into the hands of Gain Whitman. Gain?
Each week, we present the National Broadcasting Company's Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award to some outstanding observation post or filter center. This week, and for the first time, we are deviating from our regular practice of award. Here is Captain Russell Z. Smith to make this week's presentation. Captain Smith?
The Santa Maria Valley Red Cross chapter has taken a great deal of initiative in making its motor corps serve the Army. You have just heard the story. You know of the work involved, the courage to start something new. The Santa Maria Red Cross chapter must be recognized. Captain Longwell, will you step back to the microphone?
Yes, sir.
To your motor corps and to the Santa Maria Valley Red Cross chapter, we present this week's Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award.
Well, this is a surprise, and I mean it. Thank you so very much.
We all salute the people of Santa Maria.
Gain Whitman saying goodnight for the 150,000 Aircraft Warning Service civilian volunteers who keep constant vigil of our home front so that America will be safe from any attack by air. Good night.
Eyes Aloft is written and produced by Robert L. Redd. The music is composed and conducted by Gordon Jenkins. This is Ken Carpenter charging you to always remember Eyes Aloft.
Eyes Aloft. Watching the sky, watching for planes flying the lanes up above. Eyes aloft, always on guard, lending a hand, protecting the land we love.
Eyes Aloft comes to you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Eyes Aloft, on Tuned to Yesterday, the 15th program in that NBC series from November 23rd, 1942. This is an hour of true history on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for an excerpt of the Behind the Mic series with some true radio history heard on the NBC Blue Network as part of a half-hour program on October 27th, 1940.
We in radio believe that radio has a tradition of good programs that lingers fondly in our memory. But it has something more than that. It has splendid tradition of radio pioneers, people who have acted in programs, who have created them, and who have helped to make radio what it is today. And here is news commentator John B. Kennedy to pay tribute to one of the finest of these pioneers, Colonel Charles T. Davis. He has a most unusual and dramatic story to tell. John B. Kennedy.
None of us who associated with Colonel Charles T. Davis in radio can ever forget him. I worked with him on the old Collier's Hour, on which he collaborated with my old friend Malcolm LaPrade. Colonel Davis Graham was a most unusual man. He was a retired English army officer who had served in India and Mesopotamia. He was bronzed, of medium height, and quite handsome. I've always thought it amazing that an Englishman with his background should, in the early 20s, when radio was quite new, see the possibilities that American radio had, and should become a radio writer, director, and actor.
Two of the most famous characters he acted were Old Man Donaldson and Don Amazo. Isn't that so, John?
That's right, Graham. They were two of the most famous characters in early radio, and he, with Malcolm LaPrade, was the first writer to do dramatizations of motion pictures for radio. But the Collier's Hour, the first magazine of the air, which started in 1927, was really his baby. He helped write the script, he cast it, and he acted roles in it. And that program itself was a real pioneer. For instance, one day before rehearsal, we were talking in the studio. What do you think of that idea, John?
I think it's all right, John. I don't see why we shouldn't have people in the studio watching our broadcast. What do you say, Fred?
Oh, but, Colonel, it's never been done.
Well, just because no other programs have had an audience in the studio is no reason why we shouldn't.
Yes, but it's disillusioning for people to see us reading scripts.
Oh, we can't keep this thing a mystery forever. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if someday almost all programs had people in the studio watching them.
Well, Colonel, it's certainly an innovation.
It wouldn't be our first. After all, here we are on a Sunday night program, and people said we would never dare play popular music on a Sunday night. But we did. And now a lot of other programs are doing the same thing. And now, if you people have your scripts, we'd better start rehearsing.
Sometime in 1929, the Colonel became very ill. But he continued directing the program, helping to write it and to act in it. He had to undergo a very serious operation, which he postponed until the show was off the air for the summer of 1929. Shortly before we returned to the air, he had his second serious operation. But he kept in touch with the program, even though he was far too ill to work on it or to attend to the broadcasts. I never can and I never shall forget the Collier's Hour broadcast of January the 12th, 1930. It comes to me again quite vividly. We were broadcasting from the lodge in what was called the Cathedral Studio of the old NBC building on Fifth Avenue. The cast was on the stage, and in front sat an eager audience. Our cast was in the midst of a dramatization of a current Collier story.
Don't get the idea I'm afraid of her, but she did go down to see Joe Smythe this afternoon.
Ah, and you ain't sure as to what she might do, eh?
No, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if she's up to something. I feel she knows more about the murder than she lets on.
Colonel, this is a surprise.
I jolly well had to come over just to see how things were coming.
Well, old man, how do you feel?
Splendid, old man. Splendid.
But, Colonel...
Shh. John, there's a broadcast going on.
Well, I'm certainly glad to see you here.
There's enough. Now, what's the difference? You might as well aim for two murders.
Graham, the Colonel sat in the studio during the rest of the broadcast. He was terribly ill. But he was just as interested in everything that went on as when he was helping direct the show and write the script. His courage never deserted him for one moment. But the most amazing thing that struck me was his attire. He was immaculately dressed in white tie and tails, as though his appearance at this broadcast marked some special occasion, and probably it did. It must have been an agonizing effort for him to appear at all. But something I'll never forget occurred when I made my sign-off announcement. I was announcing the features of next week's show. Next week, ladies and gentlemen, we will bring you an interesting dramatization of the new Guy Gilpatrick story, and John Erskine, the famous author, will appear in person to tell you about it. Graham, that was what the listeners heard. But if they only could have been in the studio, what they would have seen was this. As I finished my final announcement, Colonel Davis left his chair, and he walked up to the microphone. He opened his mouth as if to talk into the mic, and I could see him desperately struggling to speak. But he couldn't utter a sound. He tried again. Then he shrugged his shoulders and slowly walked back to his chair. I always felt that he wanted to say a last goodbye to the radio audience in America to whom he had given so much. Several weeks later, I made this announcement at the close of the Collier's Hour. Since the inception of Collier's Hour 3 years ago, ladies and gentlemen, you have heard either the voice or the work of Colonel Thomas Davis. We regret to say that you will hear them no more. For on Wednesday morning, Tom Davis died. In his passing, radio lost a pioneer artist, Collier's Hour a valued associate, and I a very dear friend. Colonel Davis was a soldier and a gentleman. Epitaph enough for any man.
An excerpt of Behind the Mic, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 27th of October, 1940, on the NBC Blue Network. We now wrap this hour of true history, on Tuned to Yesterday, with an episode of Strange as It Seems, from 1935.
The makers of X-Lax present Strange as It Seems. Here's an item from a recent newspaper. Coals cost country $450 million yearly. How much of that bill do you pay? If you take coal, you pay for it not only in dollars and cents, but in days missed from work and in sniffling, sneezing misery. So guard against colds by following these simple rules. Get sufficient sleep. Dress warmly. Eat wisely. Keep your feet dry. And above all, keep regular. But in keeping regular, remember this. Avoid all harsh and violent remedies. Don't upset your already ailing system. Choose a laxative that is mild, one that is correctly timed so that it won't throw your system out of rhythm. X-Lax, for instance. In addition to being mild and gentle and correctly timed, it is completely thorough and effective. It's easy to take, too, because it tastes just like delicious chocolate. Just 10 cents a box at any drugstore, or there's the family size at 25 cents. Do you know about the amusing gift the makers of X-Lax wish to present to you absolutely free? If not, then don't miss the closing announcement. The Mystery Vault of the Barbados. Scientists say everything can be explained, but they are wrong. Nobody has ever been able to explain the weird mystery vault at Barbados in the West Indies, where those who went to their last resting place did not rest. It is July 17th, 1819. The interment of Thomasina Clark has just taken place. Her coffin has been placed in the family vault. No less a personage than Lord Cumbermere, Governor of Barbados, is present as the vault is sealed.
Is everything finished, Captain Barclay?
Yes, Lord Cumbermere. We have examined every inch of the vault. We have placed the other coffins in rows and have sprinkled sand over the entire floor.
And now, have you cemented the entrance?
Yes, Your Excellency.
Well, by Jove, we've done everything we can. Now we can only wait and hope that this infernal business will stop.
And for the sake of the family, I do hope that nothing will be disturbed.
Well, I've witnessed the closing and sealing of the vault. I've even scratched a mark of my own on the outside so that I could tell it if it were touched. I've done my best. Good day.
Good day, Your Excellency.
3 o'clock already. I must hurry back to Government House.
Lord Cumbermere, please may I speak to you?
Why, certainly, Mrs. Clark. Please let me express my deepest sympathy. We shall miss your daughter.
Thank you, Your Excellency. Oh, sir, will it all end now? Will she be left alone?
Nobody knows. It's been this way for over 20 years. When they close the vault, everything is in order. When it's opened, well, you know how everything is upside down.
The Negroes are whispering that it's voodoo. But I can't believe that. No human being could possibly be wicked enough to go in a vault and disturb the very coffins of the dead.
No one ever will. I have seen to that. No living thing can enter the vault now.
Eight months pass. Then, one night, a strange sound seems to come from within the massive vault. The next morning, Lord Cumbermere and his aide-de-camp, in company with a few other men, go to the entrance of the tomb.
There's that mark I made, absolutely untouched.
And it's obvious that nobody has tampered with the outside of the vault, sir.
We'd better open it up and look inside.
Very well. Open the vault, men. Step lively now, come on. Lend him a hand, Smith. Ready, sir.
Have you a candle?
Yes, sir, already lighted.
Very well, Barclay, follow me.
Take it slowly, Your Excellency.
Ah, look. Look there. Everything upside down again.
And there isn't a footprint on the sand we sprinkled. Not a grain has been disturbed.
And yet, all around us, havoc.
I don't see how.
Let me out of here. Let me out.
Look out, sir. Be careful. Don't stumble.
Ah, thank God. To breathe the clean air again.
Oh, my Lord. You're pale as a ghost. Are you ill?
No, I'm quite all right, thank you.
Everything is all torn up again inside.
Good heavens. Lord Cumbermere, what had we better do now?
Gentlemen, I am a soldier. I fought side by side with Wellington. But this fiendish business I cannot fight. I'm beaten. Therefore, before the hour is up, I want every coffin within this vault to be removed. From now on, it will remain empty. Whatever this thing is which creeps through stone without leaving footmarks, I do not know. But it will not disturb the dead again. From now on, it will wander within this tomb alone.
Strange as it seems, no one has ever been able to explain the mystery of the vault in the Barbados, which still exists. All natural causes, such as earthquake or water, have been given up as impractical. It was a physical impossibility for a human being to go inside the tomb. What was it? The Sleeping Tiger. Constantinople. For 100 years, the magnificent city has been the battleground of the Crusades. Now it is governed by the Christian emperor, John of Brienne, who of all men least deserves to rule the glamorous Eastern Empire. John of Brienne, handsome, lazy, good-for-nothing, reclines on the huge feather divan covered with cushions of swan's down. A fair-haired English girl stands before him.
Come, Eleanor. Sit beside me.
No. I would rather kill myself.
Well, listen to me, girl. I am Emperor of Constantinople. You are the daughter of a poor Englishman who had the misfortune to die on my hands.
You beast.
I have offered you a roof over your head, and, well, naturally, in return for this, I expect you to be, pleasant.
Never. Never.
Well, why not? No man can give you more than I.
You aren't a man.
Oh, you insult me.
I am used to men who carry shields and swords. Men who fight for their womenfolk.
Why should I fight? Someone else can do it for me.
Look at your hands. Swollen with fat. Covered with rings. Look at your face. Bloated with food and wine.
Oh, come now. I may become angry if you continue in this fashion.
Perhaps this will make you angry.
You struck me in the face.
No. You see what I think of you?
Oh. It's Rathalos, your chamberlain. I bring bad news. Let me enter, I beg of you.
Oh, come in. Well, Wenceslaus?
Your Majesty.
What's the trouble?
Your Majesty, in the distance, the Bulgarians are marching toward the city.
What? Already?
Yes, Your Majesty.
I thought they would not arrive for another month. Well, the rains are barely over.
They're almost here, Your Majesty. A messenger says there are over 100,000 soldiers.
100,000?
We're at their mercy. They've discovered that our soldiers have no leader, no one to inspire them.
Why, what do you mean? I am their leader.
I also said no one to inspire them.
Oh, I understand.
What are we to do, Your Majesty?
I will lead the army myself.
You? Oh, Your Majesty, this is no time for jesting. Constantinople is at stake.
Bring me my shield and my armor. Bring me my sword. Have them saddle my horse.
But, Your Majesty...
Go as I say.
Very well, Your Majesty.
And order all the knights in the palace to prepare themselves for battle. And assemble in the courtyard.
I will, Your Majesty.
Well, Helena, what do you say now, eh?
You mean you are really going?
Yes.
I do not believe it.
After years of useless living, I wish to feel my horse beneath me again. I long for the clash of arms. I wonder, will these fat hands still hold a sword, eh?
What has happened to you?
My cheek still stings from your blow. The call to arms, I must go. Thank you for my awakening. Goodbye. Into battle. You all know me, what I've been for many years. Are you still willing to follow me, to fight for me unto death? There are 2,000 of us against 100,000. Then, Knights of the Cross, in the name of God our Father, forward! Forward! Forward!
As it seems, John of Brienne, Emperor of Constantinople, after 20 years of indolence and debauchery, suddenly led a small army of knights and infantry against 100,000 Bulgarians, and so inspired his men that he won a complete victory.
You know the old saying, out of the mouths of babies? The truth is that no matter how wise we are, we can all learn something from children. For instance, if you offer a child an upsetting, a sickening remedy, he'll refuse it, spill it, fight against it, everything in fact but take it, which is just as it should be. Bad for anyone, violent mixtures are unthinkable for a child. Solve your problem the modern way. Simply offer your children a little tablet of X-Lax when they need a laxative, and you'll get smiles instead of tears. Children actually love to take it because it tastes just like smooth, velvety chocolate. And in addition to being mild and gentle, X-Lax is correctly timed so that it won't shock delicate little systems. In fact, it is just what a laxative should be, whether you are 6 years old or 60. X-Lax is 10 cents a box at your druggist. Then there's the economical family size at 25 cents. And don't forget that we have a gift for you. An amusing book that's just filled with new and strange incidents designed especially for you by John Hicks, the internationally famous creator of this series, Strange as It Seems. We want you to have one. It's absolutely free, so write to this station now for your copy. Most of us have suffered hallucinations at some time or other. With King Bernadotte of Sweden, such was the case. Only he saw his ghost not once, but all his life. Listen in to our next broadcast. You will also meet the child who went to war. You have just heard Strange as It Seems by John Hicks, directed by Cyril Armbrister. There is no such country as Japan.
Strange as It Seems, Untuned to Yesterday, a syndicated episode from 1935, bringing to a close this hour of true history, Untuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. It's been a pleasure.